Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Love Fruit podcast. We are joined today by the host of the Elegantly Raw show and also the founder of the California Fruit Festival. That's Dorit Dijkhe. And Dorit has previously been with us on the Fruity Fridays and gave us a presentation on that on our Fruity Fridays show, which is every Friday. We have a live Zoom session that you can all join. Go to fruitfest.co.uk. You'll find out more information there. But Dorit has, among many things, worked with some quite famous people, I believe. And we may talk about that. We'll talk about her journey in general. So, Dorit, is there anything else you'd like to say about yourself in your introduction?
Thanks, first of all, Ronnie. Hi. So, the Elegantly Raw show has actually transitioned into being on Apple TV, Samsung TV, Android TV, LG TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire as the on cooking show. So
That's
it's now
amazing.
the on cooking show.
Well, that's
Yeah.
amazing, yeah.
But people have to download first the on-chain TV link. And then they can have access to it on their TVs whenever they wish to. They have an Apple TV, et cetera, any of those
Brilliant.
platforms.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So, Dorit, how did it all start out for you? I guess you weren't brought up on a raw vegan diet?
So it started out actually when I was a child. All I ever wanted to eat or would eat were fruits. That was it. Like most children, by the way. I find that most children are exactly like that too. And I'm not surprised because I think we instinctively and intuitively gravitate to fruits. I mean, if you were to put this papaya and cut this up in front of a child and you'd put a plate of meat or chicken, they will go for the papaya automatically. It's just the way that our instinct, we know we eat instinctively until it's beaten out of us, shouted out of us, shamed out of us, incredibly conditioned out of us, and also until we just give up and we give in, because that was my experience. It started actually when I was forcefully inoculated. Now, remember, I was a wee one, I was a child, so I had no idea what this inoculation was. I just know they were force feeding me with something that I didn't want. And then they were also putting a needle into me. And I have very few memories of my childhood. The ones I have are so strong. This is the strongest one of me being held down by adults to be inoculated. I cannot begin to tell you when 2020, when we were forcefully told we had to be inoculated, what that did to me. Because this was a trauma as a child that has stayed with me. And I ended up in the hospital as a result because my body, which had only been used to fruits, just went totally berserk all of a sudden, having these things in there. And I saw that as my punishment. I remember my father, because I grew up with my father. I saw my father walking out of the hospital ward and leaving me in this ward where people were screaming and pain and whatnot. And the trauma of that, of seeing him walk away and leaving me this wee thing in this big bed amount, all in this foreign place, I thought I was being punished for eating fruit only and be so strict with it. So I saw correlation then between our own decision to feed ourselves how we wish to and the correlations of a larger society outside of us not wanting us to do that. And instead, wanting us to do what they say. So, for me, of course, this started a resistance to the medical model in me, even as a teenager. So, while I was in the hospital after being forcefully inoculated, and I don't remember what the problems were, but I was very sick. I was told that I had to eat something there in the hospital, and I wouldn't eat anything they brought me. So finally, they brought me some vegetable soup. And that, interestingly, I did eat. And therein started my downfall. Truly my downfall. Because I started eating soup. And then that's the only thing that I would eat afterwards that was cooked. And then when I was a teenager, I got into Japanese ramen soups. Did me in. Let me explain to you, Ronnie, that I was constantly sick afterwards.
Oh.
Constantly. You would think the grown-ups would say, oh, we better let her go back to eating the way she wants to eat because she was never sick before. Remember, I was never sick. I never got any of the illnesses or problems that my classmates got or my peers got, nor my family got. I was always the healthy one, brimming with life and energy. All of a sudden, I'm now eating this cooked food, and it didn't matter that it was plant-based at all. All of a sudden, now I'm sick all the time and sometimes violently sick. But they refused to believe it was because I was eating their food. And so that was my big mistake, is in giving in to people telling me what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. So now, as you can imagine, I am very much into teaching people how to follow their instincts and their intuition only and not give in to anything anybody else says, because this is my body, this is your body, and you are the only authority on your body. And that's the work that I'm doing now. The reason for the On Cooking show is to show people that they can have their gourmet and enjoy themselves eating gourmet since they're addicted to that and they love it. But at least the food is not cooked. So at least they're getting rid of all of the energy lows and all of the huge amount of problems that comes with cooking our foods. I do not tell them about any of the problems that come with cooking our foods. I do not try to convert them. I just give them as much gourmet as possible, even although I don't eat that way. I eat very simply. I just eat fruits and I eat mono fruits. For example, this will be lunch today. And I love cherry moyes, and we're coming to the end of cherry moyes season here. I live in Los Angeles right now. We're coming to the end of cherry moyes season, so I'm eating all the cherry moyes that I can right now. And I'm a mono eater as a child, as every child is a mono eater. Even when I started to eat cooked food, I was a mono eater. Like I would eat an entire bowl of just steamed broccoli or steamed asparagus. So even though I was eating what the adults wanted me to eat, I still didn't eat their way. To put a plate in front of me of several different things all at once absolutely shocked me. I just couldn't eat a plate. Even if I saw something in there I liked, I couldn't eat it because it was on the plate with so many things, but give it to me just by itself and I would eat it. I remember going to Amsterdam and learning about the Indonesian Richtstafel and loving it because there were tiny plates. You know, just one thing, and you pick this and you pick that. But when I came to the United States, I was shocked. I got this huge platter, and I mean this huge platter, and on it were so many different things. And this is at vegan restaurants, and I just couldn't eat at vegan restaurants. And I couldn't even eat it. I was still like a child. I couldn't eat it just because they were all on the same platter. It was too much in front of me. So I would say to them, "Can you remove everything and just give me the asparagus by itself?" And then I could eat the asparagus. So it's very interesting that I went back to eating fruits and I regained myself.
So how, wait, I mean, when did that happen? Like, and you mentioned, you seemed to allude to the fact that you had some problems when you started to eat the cooked foods again. And did you have health issues growing up, to even in your early adulthood? And at what point did you actually start to move back to the fruit diet?
So I was violently sick as a teenager all the time, every month having 3 days not being able to go to school, having violent menstrual cramps, huge, I mean, really cramping over so I couldn't even stand, I couldn't sit up like this. And I almost bled to death as a teenager. And fortunately, this was in Israel where at the time doctors were all into nutrition. And the local doctor, we have this national health insurance like you do in the UK, and you'd just go to the local clinic, and the doctor there said to me, "I'm going to put you on a rotation diet. I'm going to take you, oh, and I'm going to take you off." No, I hated milk, by the way. I refused to drink milk. I couldn't. But I had started as a teenager, I had started little by little eating yogurt. It's not really yogurt. It's this thing in Israel that we call shemenet and leben. It's like a yogurt. And I said to me, so I started eating little bits of it. And from that, I almost died. Just that little bit, just that little bit. And the th thing is that I loved the leben, but I didn't like the shemenet. And so the doctor said, I'm taking you off all dairy, which was fine with me because all I was doing was the leben. And he said, for 2 weeks, and I'll put you back on for 2 weeks and see what happens because I think this is the root of your problem. So he took me off and everything cleared up. I stopped bleeding profusely. I was fine. I stopped hemorrhaging. And then he said, okay, now I'm going to put you back on. From the first sip of that leben, I started hemorrhaging again. He said, forget it. We're not doing the whole rotation. We already know we're not. It will kill you. This will kill you. No dairy in any way, shape, or form for the rest of your life, which was fine with me because I wasn't a dairy person anyway. But then I went to France. And in France, vegetarian was fine, but not veganism at that time. Now it's changing. Thank you, France. And the only thing I didn't like about France was the food, whereas everybody else said, but that's exactly what's the best thing about France. Not for me. So I used to go when I was in Dijon. I went to University of Dijon. There was a farmer's market that I would then go to on a regular basis, and I ate what was attracted to me, not because I thought I have to go back to eating fruits the way I did as a child, but because that's what attracted me. But I was also, because I was just at the end of my teens, I had a host family, and they would go to so much length to make me all this cooked vegan food. And it was a formal sit-down meal in the French meals, you have three, four different courses. And I was got so sick from that. I was just doing it out of courtesy and because that was expected of me. And I was violently sick from that. Went to Paris, was violently sick until I found out that in the Quartier Latin, there is this place that sold crudité sandwiches with freshly baked. Now, remember, I didn't eat bread either. But now, all of a sudden, this freshly baked baguette, no butter, they'd put freshly expelled olive oil on it, and everything else was crudité, just raw vegetables. And I would go every day to the Quartier Latin and just eat that because that was the only thing from which I didn't get sick, which interestingly, I didn't get sick from the baguette. But remember, it was freshly made. This was France, and their flour was different. And their water was different. This was very important. I find the water that they put in the flour and they make it. So that's when I realized, well, I didn't even realize it then because I just wasn't eating anything that was cooked. I would just go there and that was all I ate. And then I would go to the farmers markets, which there's plenty of all over the place in France. It's not even called a farmers market, it's everywhere, and eat lots of fruits. When I went to New York City after that, I got a job teaching for the UN when I was in France, and they sent me to the headquarters in New York. I got violently sick. And plus, I hated New York with a passion. So I asked them if I could start the next year instead. This is only after they've been in there for a week. Violently sick just from going to vegan restaurants in New York. And I also found out that there were Korean places in New York where you could get freshly made everything. And so they would cut up the fruit and then you could just go and put it in a bowl and take it. But I didn't know that they had preservatives on it. So I was getting sick from the fruit that I was getting there too, which really shocked me. So I asked if I could come back the next year to New York to work at the UN because I wanted to figure out what was going on. Then I got a job where I was working in Ireland. So I was in Ireland and going to a vegan restaurant there, of all places near Shamrock, which was really out of the way. To have a vegan restaurant there was incredible. And I started eating certain things that were cooked, but again, I was doing the mono eating. And they were so wonderful to accommodate me. And so I asked them for more fruits, and they started bringing more fruits. And that's when my health started getting restored. But I still didn't see the connection, Ronnie.
That's really interesting. And it sounds like you've been a real world traveler. You're talking about Israel, France, Poland, New York, Ireland. How come you traveled so much?
I lived in other countries because I see the world as my living room, my living space. I see the world as my home. So right now, my living room is Los Angeles. My home is in Israel, yes, but a real home, in my opinion, is not has nothing to do with being here on Earth. So it's where we came from, and it's where we will end up returning. And I've never seen myself as being earthbound, except when I eat cooked food, which I find I'm very earthbound then, and I really get violently sick. So I almost died again when I was in living in Canada. I went to live in Canada and was back on eating the cooked foods. I think it didn't matter that it was vegan. That's when people say to me, oh, but the healthiest diet is the vegan diet. I say, it might be for you, not for all of us.
And when did you make that connection then of getting back to the raw and the fruit diet? When did you start to make that connection with your health?
When I arrived in Los Angeles, there was a place called the Beverly Hills Juice Club. And there's this wonderful woman with her husband who started it. And Jennifer was her name. And I would go in every day to get freshly made juices. And yes, I eat juices, contrary to what a lot of people in the fruitarian movement think, that one should not be juicing or fruits or and whatnot. And I started going there every day and eating only from there. And she did have some, they did make at the time raw hummus. And being Israeli, I love hummus. And I was like, oh yeah, let me try that. Loved it. And she one day said to me, it's so wonderful, you know, you look healthy being raw, but most people who are raw look too skinny and not healthy. And I thought, I'm not raw. I said to her, what do you mean raw? I didn't understand what she meant. And I said, what do you mean? I don't understand. She says, yes, you are raw. Everything you eat is not cooked. I didn't even realize it. It just happened on its own with me paying attention to it, because I was going from my instinct.
Wow.
I was eating intuitively. That was it. It wasn't because I thought I ought to eat this way. It was just me going. But I still was not totally well. Completely. I was fine, but I wasn't totally well. And the fruit came about because every summer I would eat only fruit because there was an abundance of it in Southern California, but mainly the fruits from Mexico. I was more attracted to the fruits from Mexico. This used to be Mexico. So fruits from Mexico right. is local and they have a lot of it. So I started eating all the fruits from my childhood and I was in seventh heaven and nobody anymore could tell me. I didn't have a boyfriend to tell me what I shouldn't eat or shouldn't eat, that I must try this. I must try this. I was new here. I didn't have anybody telling me how to eat. I went back to my intuition. And that's how every summer I would eat only fruit. And then in the winter, I would still be raw because now Jennifer taught me that I was only being raw, but I would eat some salads and some raw hummus and things like that. But I never was as well as in the summer during the winter.
It sounds like your transition happened naturally without even trying. You weren't planning on it. You weren't trying to do it. You were just following your intuition.
Yes.
So did you need some advice, help or encouragement to take it another step to sort of perfect it in a way, or you just found it in your own?
I think it's only perfected when we go according to our intuition and our instinct and we honor it. That's the only way to perfect it. So like I don't even now, although I'm a coach and I'm now going online with my coaching, I still don't teach people to go raw or to be raw. I teach people how to honor their instinct and their intuition. And because most people have lost it, how to go back to it and how to access it. So I don't teach people to be raw. And that's why the show is called The On Cooking Show, because I didn't like Elegantly Raw. I didn't like I wanted to take the raw out. And I think the show now, because that reaches more people.
Okay, that's good. So so it's hard to ask, did you notice any benefits? Because it seems like you were always kind of doing it slightly or kind of going towards it. But did you notice any major change?
Yes, huge. Now I no longer eat. I don't even want it. It's not because I don't eat it. I mean, I have here a grower to grow microgreens. I haven't used it all winter this winter. No, I did. I used it last winter. Because just automatically, I didn't want to do greens anymore in the winter. I tried to eat lettuce 2 weeks ago. I just didn't want it. You know, every now and then I do try. I do see, you know, how would I respond to this? And I just don't want it. And it's just happened organically. And I My, I cannot begin to tell you the difference in me now. Yes, I saw a major change, Ronnie, from being raw based, green based, green plant based in the winter to just fruits in the summer. And then one winter, I think it was about maybe 2 or 3 winters ago, I don't remember. One winter came and we had more fruits than we usually did. And it started with cherry moyas. Now, I'm a cherry moya freak. So when I can get a lot of cherry moyas, I'm going to go for them. And I just, and then the about 2 winters ago, the citrus here just went, they were amazing. All of a sudden, they were sweet and juicy. And so, I mean, in Israel, we grew up, you know, having freshly made orange juice every morning. It's just part of the diet. And now I could do that again. What I hated living in France is I couldn't have freshly squeezed orange juice every morning. I couldn't stand it. And then they have this thing called orangeada, which I, in a bottle, which
Yeah,
just,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
I couldn't stand it. So, and then I discovered, rediscovered grapes. I loved grapes as a child. And then somebody said to me, God, you're a grape fanatic. You should listen to Dr. Robert Morse. So I started follow during 2020 when we were on a lockdown. I started going on YouTube and listening to Dr. Robert Morse, and I went, I'm home. I'm home. That for me is like I found someone who understands me. I found my home.
Very cool, very cool. So how long have you been raw then? It must be quite a long time.
I don't know because I didn't pay attention. It was just organic. I don't do time, so I don't pay attention to time
Okay.
dates or things like that. So it's just what I love about my own life now, as opposed to before, is that I no longer do anything that I know intuitively doesn't work for me. Nobody can convince me to do anything that doesn't work for me.
So, what are some of the it's a lot of these questions are hard to ask, I suppose, because your journey is a little bit different to other people's, but what are the kind of mistakes you see people making? You obviously you're a coach. What kind of mistakes do you see people make?
They follow advice because they've given their own powers away to the point where they need advice. I am into empowering people to take their powers back, and our power lies in our intuition, in our instincts, if we follow that. So, but most people are so cut off and blocked off from their instinct and their intuition. That's really the problem. And that's why I don't teach people how to be raw foods. I teach people how to be raw in their lives. Now, this is going to help you a lot to get there and quicker. So, yes, I gave you diets and what not to do and, ways to go into this slowly so that you can be more raw in confronting yourself. And right now, what I'm doing now is I'm teaching trauma-induced eating. Because most of us, our eating styles are based on trauma, whether it's handed down from generation to generation. And what I didn't say to you is that I studied Bert Hellinger's systemic family constellations, where you look and see what traumas you've taken on from one generation to the next. Sometimes it's skip a generation, it goes to the other person. And most of us have only trauma-induced lifestyles, eating lifestyles. And all of our lifestyles. It's interesting because before this, you were telling me you never smoked or had alcohol. Most families, that's part of the family structure and the family system. So I think it's easier for you, somebody like you, to then go back to nature, nature's call, than somebody who has smoked and totally shut off the energy of their lungs and their heart energy. It's so scary. To then open up to that and be raw. When I say raw, I don't just mean a raw diet of food, but a raw diet in your language. I also studied linguistics and nonviolent communication, and I use language. The first thing I do with my clients is re-language them. In order to re-empower them and to get them back to the intuition, I change their languaging.
Could you describe that a little bit? What do you mean by changing the language?
So to relanguage ourselves means when I look at this papaya, for example, this evokes immediate an emotional response in some people. Like I know somebody who's in the raw food movement, by the way, who says, I can't eat papayas. I break out every time I eat papayas. Then I found out she wasn't really totally raw. See, when I work with a client, I challenge what everything that they've said to me to see if that
Sure.
was really true or not. And this has so many enzymes, which totally and completely pulls out of her all of the stuff that's been sitting locked in her body for such a long time. She does not have the capacity to deal with that because her languaging says, papaya does this to me. When I eat papaya, it makes me break out rather than saying, I break out when I eat papaya. Something in me responds to the papaya this way. The papaya didn't cause it. Something in me causes that when a papaya enters me and it starts interacting with my cells then release the stuff that's been in there for so very long. So that's how I changed their languaging.
So what for you is a typical day? If there is a typical day on your lifestyle.
I get up really early. I always have my entire life, even as a child. And I go to bed early. I get up with the birds and I go to bed with the birds. They are my guidepost and my roadmap if I'm up too late. When I was a teenager and we used to have all these parties and whatnot, if my friends did not start their parties at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, they wouldn't see me. If it started at 8, I was gone. As soon as the sun went down, I was gone. And fortunately, I was very popular as a teenager because I was also a dancer and apparently I was in TV. I didn't even know that. I don't remember any of this stuff. But people always said, you have so much energy. How do you get? And I said, well, do you notice when I go to sleep? I go to sleep when it gets dark. You know what is interesting, Ronnie? When I talk about living according to our instinct, and this is what I teach people to live according to their intuition, their instinct. Instinctually, when it gets dark, I cannot do anything anymore. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to eat. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to clean the house. I don't want to go to a party. I just want to shut down. What do we humans do? The rest of of nature, except for the night creatures, the nocturnal creatures, the rest of nature shuts down. Everything shuts down. What we do, we make artificial lighting. So we can continue and go against nature. And we continue doing the same thing we do during the day. Why? Why? That takes us out of tune with the rhythms of the universe. And when we get back in touch with our instinct, with our intuition, we start honoring the rhythms of the universe. And one of the deepest rhythms of the universe is nighttime and daytime. My favorite time of day is dawn. When the darkness starts transitioning into light, I love it. Now, I was trained also by Deepak Chopra. And so I also a meditation teacher for him. And part of my courses with my clients is I teach the meditation as well, because I think it's really important getting in touch with the truth of who we are. And the only way to do that is to go internally, because the truth of who we are is internal, it's never on the outside of us. So I get up in the mornings early and I meditate first. Now, you might think I meditation by sitting still. Not always. Sometimes I meditate by dancing. Remember, I used to be a professional dancer. Sometimes it's in movement that I meditate. Sometimes it's in song. I will sing. So, and it's not just chanting certain. And I also do that, you know, because I did teach for Deepak Chopra. And I, you know, to teach for him, we have to go to India. And I did learn all of these chants and whatnot. But sometimes it is that. But sometimes it's just a song that I will sing over and over and over. Sometimes I will move. I do a lot of what's now called mobility training, which is, I'm also a trained movement therapist and a movement analyst, by the way. And so I will do a lot of movement and I will sing sometimes with the movement, and that gets me into a meditative state. So I do what works for me, not what people tell me or how to do it. So to me, that's my meditation. I used to run a lot. I used to run, and that would put me in a meditative state. I'm a long distance runner. I haven't since 2020 because it's gotten very dangerous here right now. Very, very dangerous to be outdoors when it's that early. So that's the only reason why I don't anymore. But my first thing when I get nerd, this is what I do first, and then I go into nature to restore my own memories of being part of nature. And that's my first morning rituals.
And what is your diet on a typical day?
So in winter, I'm very seasonal. So in winter, it's almost always some sort of citrus first. Whatever citrus is in season is the sweetest and the juiciest then. And on, I said at the beginning, I don't do what other people tell us to do or say I needs to be done. So many people say you shouldn't be juicing. Well, excuse me, but I juice. First thing in the morning, I juice. I love juicing a pineapple. Oh my goodness. And in winter, summer, I love juicing cantaloupes
Wow.
and honey melons, honeydew melons. And I don't juice a lot of watermelons. I used to, as a teenager, juice a lot of watermelons. In fact, my best friend in Israel said, I remember all your parties. As a teenager, we'd come and you would be feeding us watermelon juice and all these juices from fruits that we never thought were possible. And I'm doing that for myself again, back again. And then I will eat something, with like right now I'm eating mangoes afterwards. That's my, or eating cherry moyas because they're the last of the season, or papayas, whatever is in season at the moment. Right now, we just started having strawberries, came back. So this week I had strawberries for breakfast. Yesterday in the morning, I had my first blueberries of the year.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
And
Well,
I don't do dinner. I do breakfast, but I don't do lunch or dinner. I don't do what we're told to do. I eat when I feel like I'm ready to eat.
so when did you start making the journey towards sharing the raw food lifestyle with other people? And how did you do that? And what's the whole story of that career for you?
I went to Living Light Culinary Arts Institute at the turn, I don't remember the year, but there was a turn of the so-called millennium. And I say so-called because in the Chinese New Year, in the Hebrew New Year, in the Hebrew year, it's not year 2000 at all.
Sure.
And in all the ancient traditions in the Hindu calendar, it's not. So I started, it was William the Conqueror, do you know, who started having us celebrate a new year in January?
I didn't know that, no.
Yes. I don't. I celebrate my New Year still with the Jewish New Year and with the Chinese New Year. I celebrate them all in the Persian New Year. So I went to Living Light Culinary Arts Institute. I don't remember how I found out about it. Could have been online. But I remember once I had a party for friends who were visiting and family who were visiting in LA. And I served what I eat. And one of them wanted a cake. And so I made a cake, a raw cake. But I didn't know how to make it. I just did what I thought to be done. And then somehow somebody told me about Living Light. And so I went there because I wanted to learn how to make raw cakes and things like that. So when I get friends and family coming, I know how to serve them, that without it being a big deal for them. And then while there, I started learning that this could be actually a profession. And so I was teaching for Deepak at the time, for Deepak Chopra at the time, and I thought, how can I merge both? I realized, well, people have to meditate before their meals. They ought to be meditating before their meals. If they meditate before their meals, they will approach the meal very different because they're approaching themselves from a different space. So the reason why I'm doing trauma-induced eating right now, I'm working on an online course with that, is because the energy that we bring to the food, in my opinion, Ronnie, is much more important than the energy that this gives us. So I can take this papaya, a well-ripe papaya, bursting the seams with the life force. And if I'm in a nasty mood or I'm in a mood of grumbling or if I'm grieving for a loved one or whatever, I will change the energy of how it responds in my own body. So, and then I see a lot of people in the raw food movement too, talking about calories. And most people in the raw food movement do. I don't See, I'm shocked. I don't see anything as calories. I see what's the life force in here. But more importantly, what's the life force in me that I am bringing to the papaya? Can I meet the high life force of this papaya by raising my own energies to meet the energy of the papaya? And then when we come together, it's an incredible marriage. And I think with the raw food movement needs to stop using the same terminology of a sick society, which is to me is the cooked food movement, or what I call the slaughterhouse culinary movement, and change and start our own vocabulary and start our own traditions and holidays. And you know, we already have the solstice. Why aren't we celebrating the solstices? Why are we trying to be part of a society that is sick and rejection and base everything on either rejecting you or accepting you if you go along with what they want you to do? We're not consumers. I did not come here on earth to be a consumer. I came here on earth to learn how to love. And
And
that's it.
so when how did you start coaching people and helping and being a private chef and things like that? How did that all work out for you?
So when I got back from Living Light, I got back. One of the fellows there, he was also training. He came back and he wanted us to start something together. It was his idea. And so we had a party and I only invited about 10 or 11 people to come and try our foods. We made all this stuff, you know, that we'd learned. Ronnie, there were over 100 people. They were outside the door. We could not. I don't know. People spread the word. I didn't go online with any of this. People just invited other people because it was free of charge, which is a party to try these raw foods. And people started asking, would we make food for them? Would we do this? So I started out by being a chef, by making food for them after I came back and I had my chef degree. Yes. And that's how it started.
So you started basically doing, was it classes and parties in your own location, and then people wanted to hire you, I guess, from there? Was that what happened?
Yeah, I did the parties, and then from there, people wanted me to make food for them. They wanted me to make lunches for them and dinners for them, and I wasn't teaching classes yet. And then somehow there's a place here called Erewhon. At the time, it was, and they were very, very open to what I was doing. And I said to them, "Could we start doing some classes here?" And then they started doing raw food classes, and then that just really mushroomed. And before you know it, they became Raw Food Central LA,
Wow.
and I started the classes there, and then other people started asking me to teach classes. Whole Foods Market started teaching me, asked me to come and teach raw food classes. And
That's amazing. And you ended up working with people like Serena Williams, I think, and maybe some others. How did that all come about?
so it's like everything else in my life, it just developed organically. So I just got a call from Serena's assistant, and she was going to be preparing for the London Olympics. And I hadn't been to London in a while, and I thought, maybe I can get to London this way. Get back to London. Because at the time, London had two raw food restaurants, and I wanted to see what they were like. I think it was Chet Sarno had one, and I don't remember who the other person was. And anyway, So I started working with her as her yoga instructor and as her raw food chef the 2 years leading up to the Olympics. She wanted to be able to win the gold medal there. And I was contracted to work with her for those 2 years. And she won the Olympics. She won the gold medal at the Olympics.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So she only does raw. She told me, make sure you tell people I'm not vegan. I only do this when I'm tra in training.
Was she easy to work with?
You know, I don't talk about my clients, but she is a lot of fun. She can be a lot of fun, a tremendous amount of fun.
Excellent, excellent. So, let's go forward to the California Fruit Festival. How did that come about, and what are you doing with that at the moment?
Yes, good question. The California Food Festival. I asked myself that last year. How did that start? I don't even remember. I remember, having food parties here for people coming together, and somebody just mentioned one day, you know, why don't you just make it statewide? just get, do a California fruit festival, do the same thing and just do it. I thought, no, because if I'm doing that, then it's going to have to be big, because I started actually soon after I became a raw food chef and I started having all these clients, I started discovering some films about raw. And then was a Mark Perlmutter here was creating a film, 30 Days Raw, along with, and was going to go to Gabriel Cousins' place to film it. And part of it was being filmed in LA, and I was making the food for them to support the whole crew so that they could all be raw. Because I thought you all need to be raw. You can't be making a film without about raw unless you're all raw, so you can experience this for yourself. So it's authentic. And so I decided therefore at that point that I would start a raw lifestyle film festival. That's how it started, was with the Raw Lifestyle Film Festival, which was a tremendous success. I mean, the first one, we only sold about 40 tickets, and I had rented this big space. I'm a member of a Japanese wellness center here, and they had a big stage in a huge auditorium, and they had a parking lot, which was very important in LA. And I only sold about 40 tickets, and I went, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have done this. Well, by the time we went there to set up, there were people, lines, there was a queue way around the block. We ended up having to shut it down. That's how many people came to the Raw Lifestyle Film Festival. We had a lot of chefs there at the time. LA was just starting opening up a lot of restaurants with chefs, like Giuliano was there at the time. A lot of people were opening up restaurants. And so I had a lot of them there, and that's how it started. And then when we got shut down during the big recession here, after that, I decided not to go that route anymore. And then people started contacting me and saying how they missed it and would I start it up again? And I said no, because it took all of my time. All I felt like I aged 50 centuries, just putting it together and doing it. And because I'm into creating fun, not a fun experience, not into telling people what to do or how to do it, but make it fun. So there was a lot of dancing and just celebration of life there. And then I decided, instead of doing that, somebody said, why don't you just do a fruit festival? And so I decided, because people are so depressed in 2021 and 22, to start it last year. And we did an in-person one, and it was the first time that things were just starting to open up in LA, and we weren't sure if we were going to be allowed to do it or not, and a virtual one. And I preferred the virtual, so that's why I'm doing another virtual one this year.
Right, so you're doing a virtual event, and I believe I'm going to be part of that, and maybe and many other people. So that's very interesting. And so let's just finish off really with some of your tips and guidance and advice for people that are beginning, and words of wisdom for them.
Thank you, Ronnie. So, thank you, by the way, for everything that you do. I think the work that you're doing is so critical. And I think that what you're doing is so not just critical, but it's going to help tr so many people that you were not even aware of. Because I think that when we help somebody, it's like this tumbleweed that just keeps going, going, going. And this will be your legacy, I think. So thank you. And that's why I want you, yes, at the California Fruit Festival this year to thank you. So I have two things to advise people who are just starting out. First of all, congratulations. Secondly, let go of all fear-based behavior and thoughts. That's what will keep you back, and that will get you stuck. And then you'll become one of the many people who say, yeah, I was raw for a year and it worked for me, but it didn't work anymore. You didn't work anymore. You were not raw enough in your own life. You expected the food to do for you what you would not do for yourself. Food will never do for us ever what we're not willing to do for ourselves, which is to take command of our lives. To be fully responsible for any and everything in our lives, and also to empower our own selves. When you empower yourself through the use of language, everything is possible. A life of excellence becomes your birthright. But my second advice there was to change your language. about yourself. Do not even as a joke denigrate yourself or demean yourself ever. Change your language about yourself. When you change your language about yourself, everything else in your life changes. Mirror that.
Doree, how can people find you and follow you and learn from you more?
So they can go online to the oncookingshow.com. They can also go to the California Fruit Festival Facebook page, Twitter page. We're going to start a TikTok page soon. I think this week, in fact, might even have started without me because I'm not doing that. And you also can manifest for yourself everything. This is the last hint. I'm sorry. Everything for yourself you want in your life, you can manifest for yourself if and only when you're willing to look in the mirror and say the words to yourself, I love you. I used to think that was utter nonsense. And I would say utter rubbish. And then I did a power exercise with one of my clients who hated herself so much that I couldn't get her to stop demeaning herself and changing her language until one day I put her in front of the mirror and I did that. The one thing I'd been resisting with her to do, I did it and it worked. Do not be resistant. You can find me whenever you're ready at the oncookingshow.com or at the California Food Festival Facebook page or on my own Facebook page. And my name is a Hebrew name. And unfortunately, in the United States and in the UK, people massacre it when they pronounce it. So the network, because I'm now on Apple TV and all these places, they wanted me to change my name and I refused to. But I changed the spelling of it instead, and they're okay with that. So for in the public arena, I am now Doreet, because it's pronounced Dorit, which is my Hebrew name, which is the only name I've have.
Thank you very much, Dorit. And I encourage everyone to check out what's happening there and obviously to check out the California Fruit Fest and the Uncooking Show. Thank you everyone for watching and listening. This show, I guess, is helped and powered by the UK Fruit Fest, which happens at the last week of July. This year takes place 21st to the 28th of July. One of the world's biggest raw vegan festivals, retreats. And you're welcome to check that out and see if that's of interest to you. On a Friday night, we also have regular weekly Zooms, Fruity Fridays, and you can join those for free as well. Thank you for watching and listening, and we'll see you in another episode of the Love Fruit Podcast.